So continuing in our series of really important fundamentals about life, about growth, about religious identity, Avodas Hashem. Tonight we're going to talk about, this is my annual sicha, so a lot of people wait for this each year. We're going to talk about what yeshiva should be likened to and what role it should play in your life. Now, this is a sicha that's really good for the MTA guys, so MTA guys, listen carefully, because you're about to leave those who are leaving and Chas Hashem not coming back, so you want to think about this. For the Americans, store it away. In English, store it away, because I want you to think about it, and I will try to remind you, if Chas Hashem, you leave yeshiva, when that time comes. So I'll try to remind you about some of the things we spoke about tonight, and not just now, but years from now, because I want to try to plant seeds. It's easy to be successful in yeshiva. That's the easy part of life. Not everyone gets there, but 80, 90% of people get there. The fall off, that's the challenge. Who are you 5 years from now? Who are you 10 years from now? What can you, lock in? So let's talk a little bit about Vayetze. We'll try to think about what role yeshiva should play in your life. Okay, so that's part of the challenge in yeshiva. I want to give you messages to inspire you for tomorrow, to make sure you're in minyan tomorrow, to make sure that you're learning well and existentially tomorrow, not just learning well, but also to think about how you're going to plan your life. So Yaakov has a vision, and it's the most iconic, vivid image of all of Sefer Bereishis. You can't get any more iconic than Jacob's ladder. It's become a cross-cultural metaphor. Every culture has a notion of a bridge between heaven and earth. Easiest Devar Torah ever. You ever called to give Devar Torah Vayetze? Sila Mutzav Arza Varosha Megiah Shamayim. It's pretty straightforward. And if you put yourself or plug yourself into Yaakov's position, it's very vindicating and gratifying and empowering and comforting. Because we know the end of Vayetze. We know that by the end of Vayetze, he'll be a father of 11, a husband of 4, an owner of cattle, livestock, wealth, abundance. But it's a stunning metamorphosis because he begins the parsha penniless, lonely, abandoned, and stalked. Because if he doesn't get out of town, he's got his murderous, ravenous brother on his heels. So he's got to skip town pretty quickly. I know what that's like. Skipping town pretty quickly, getting out as quickly as he can before the heat comes. Before the big boss man gets a sense of where you are. Got to get out of town. He's alone. It's not just that he's alone and it's dark and that he's defenseless and he's vulnerable and the only thing he has to protect him, according to Chazal, are a few stones. But he feels abandoned. Strikingly, he doesn't hear from two sources. He knows that he has his mother's love and his mother's concern, and his mother's been guiding him and comforting him and shielding him. Did he ever have a conversation with Yitzchak? Did Yitzchak ever call him into the room and say, "My bad, you're right"? Chazal say that Yitzchak acknowledges it, but for whatever reason, even if they had it, that's not the story the Torah tells. The story the Torah tells is of Yaakov, who never ever touches base with Yitzchak, never hears from Yitzchak that ratification, that certifying that you're the one. So much in life is validating people, affirming people, as a friend, as a husband one day. You have to give validation to people. Let them know that they're important to you, that they're successful in your eyes, that their lives are important in your eyes. One of the ABCs of marriage is affirming your spouse and being part of their life and friends and children. Even ask yourself now, did you have a life? Were you raised with a lot of affirmation or not? It's hard for me sometimes. I know it's challenging because Rav Lichtenstein, I think, at least to me, challenged us not to need affirmation, because then you become addicted to people's opinion, to be self-sufficient and independent. But how do you become a person that doesn't need but is able to give? Doesn't always work so easily. Generally, you treat others the way you see yourself. How do you become someone that has one set of standards for yourself, a different set of standards for other people? never gets the affirmation. As far as he's concerned, his father still sees him as a criminal, as a thief, who hoodwinked his brother and deceived his father. But even more unsettling is not only does Yitzchak never speak to Yaakov, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't speak to Yaakov. Until this point, he's been running for his life, plagued by doubt, by guilt. We don't know how much time elapsed between the brachos and between this departure. The psukim give the sense that it's pretty quick, because Esav's planning his murder, sharpening his blades. Rivka says, get out. But some time elapsed. You think of Kodesh Baruch, imagine Yaakov davening to Hashem. Hashem, show me a sign. Tell me what I did was appropriate, was valid. So this is a very triumphant moment. This is a very affirming moment for Yaakov to see the angels and to see the ladder, Yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh, v'enochi lo yadati, t'daven Hashem, v'yivka b'makom. This is elation. This is, I would call it euphoria. This is all of his doubts laid to rest. All of his fears quelled. Hashem speaks to him, promises him, this is his moment. This is his conversation with Hashem. This is Yaakov's Akedas Yitzchak. This is at Har Moriah, and he's encountering HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ate Yadati Kirei Elokim Ata. This is Yaakov Vayira Vayomar. Manora Makom Hazeh. Ein Zeh Ki Embeis Elokim Vezeh Shar HaShemayim. So the question is, Josh, if you can close the door. That's not the question. That's a request. The question is, how does he respond? How does he respond to this grand visionary moment that's really his autobiographical moment? If you had to ask the one moment in Yaakov's life, many, many great moments, probably the one moment that stands out, this is his year in yeshiva. How does he respond after the fact? And if we read the psukim, it's a little bit peculiar. Vayikatz Yaakov mishnaso, first sorts, he wakes up. Vayomer, he absorbs it, he processes. Achen yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh nochi lo yadati, imanu ra makom hazeh, shar shar shemayim. And then presumably he falls back asleep, so he breaks out of REM, but he's still sleeping. He's in a deep dream, a deep state of REM. He wakes up, recognizes, goes back to sleep. Vayashkin, he turns into stones, not in his bed, he's turning into stones. Vayashkin Yaakov b'boker, the morning, now he's waking up, now he's... he has all of his resources, and he's thinking, processing. Vayikach ha-se'ev ha-shasamer ha-shasav, takes one of the stones. According to Chazal, the 12 stones, or the multiple stones, became one. If you haven't heard the famous Rav Amital Sicha about the stones and what they mean, I direct you to the shir I gave on Sunday, which is up on YU Torah, the Saga of the Stones. One of the famous, famous Rav Amital Sichot, Parshas Vayetze, in 10 minutes. He takes a stone and makes a matzeva. He pours oil on the front of the matzeva. He renames the place. So far, it makes sense. We know where this is heading. Where is this going to end up? A carbon. Where is this going to end up? Who has a sheet for Josh? Who's going to help Josh out with the sheet? Okay. Come on time, Josh. So you don't get recorded for eternity, for ignominy. We're not going to say your last name. I don't listen to the show. It's Josh's fault. Okay. We're going to make you guys come on time. What happens? Okay. Vayidar Yaakov Neder Lemor. Where is this all landing? He's going to say Hallel. He's going to bring a carbon. He's going to thank Hashem. Moshe, come early. Where's the sheet for Moshe? He's going to say Hallel to Hashem. Moshe is going to help me. Moshe had Moshe. He's going to help. He's going to say Hallel. Guys, you got to come early. It's not fair to the guys to break the monotony, to break the flow of the shir. Okay, another guest. Shalom, Anishma. Yechrim lecha? Okay. Bekashah, pa'am abal, let's see it's at Lefneshio. Beseda? Tanda rabba. Okay. So, let's all get together now, okay? Where's this all landing? He's going to say Shira, he's going to say Hallel, he's going to bring a carbon. Where's this all heading? Vayidar Yaakov neder leimar mielokim imadi, ushmarani bederech hazer shanochi olech, v'nasan li lechem lechol uveged lulbosh. V'shavti b'shalom obey sivi. You know what, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? If you protect me, and you're by my side, and you return me safely, and I've got some bread, and I've got some clothing, I'll cut you in for 10%. You scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. Okay? Look, you know, let's sign a contract, Hashem. I got my pen out, get your lawyers, I get my lawyers. What a deflating moment. This is euphoria. This is religious vision. This is Elay, sing, bring a carbon. Promise Hashem. Where do we get from Yaakov witnessing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Malachim, feeling Hashem's presence, hearing Hashem's voice to, okay, let's sign it up as 10%. You help me out, food, clothing, get back safely, safe passage. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'll give you a piece of the action. I'll give you a piece of the pie. Sounds like Brooklyn. I'll cut you in a little bit. Give you some of my business. What is Yaakov doing? How do you get from the Sulam Mutzav Arza, Malachei Elokim Olim V'Yardim Bo, angels singing in Shamayim, inspiration and vision, signing a contract with Hashem for 10%. For those that came a little late, tonight's the secret of how to translate yeshiva into your real life. That's what we're trying to question. What's the role of yeshiva? So to understand Parshas Vayetze and Yaakov's reaction, let's take a few steps back and ask ourselves, what role should yeshiva play in your life? What metaphor? Metaphors are great because they take parts of our experience that we all know. We say, well, this experience is like that experience. And now we know how to navigate the new experience by association. It's like that. So what is yeshiva like? Well, I've heard a lot of people use the following metaphor, which I think captures part of it, but I'm a little bit troubled by other parts of it. Yeshiva, it's like a teva. It's like tevas noach. Because the world around you is chaotic, morally, religiously. The world around you will consume you spiritually. And you have to sequester in a teva to save your soul and to preserve your sanctity and to preserve your integrity. The same way Noach's life is preserved for that year in the teva. It's a life preserver. And for sure, this part of it. And for sure, that's a greater struggle for you than it was for me. Because we really cut ourselves off. And Rav Lichtenstein was livid if we had any mention of Thanksgiving. If he said the word thank you, he was listening. Did you say giving? Okay, stop it. Baruch Hashem. Why? Because he thought that we had the opportunity, and we really did, to cut ourselves off from our culture. And by cutting ourselves off full turkey, amputating ourselves from our culture for a year, so you're paying attention, we're going to look back at that culture with a fresh set of eyes. And we're so desperate for you to have that fresh set of eyes, even without the amputation, even though you're connected at the hip. Can you, at least by distance, at least by perspective, not by disconnection, but at least perspective, look back and say about American culture, about South African culture, about, is there a thing called British culture, and say, well, I'll talk about this a little bit when we get to the next station of American culture amputation, the pre-Super Bowl sicha. No one is under the illusion you're going to pull yourself out of the culture. Question is how you navigate the culture. What type of consumer you'll be for the culture? Will you let the culture dictate your minds and dictate your hearts, or will you be a distanced consumer, participant, rather than just be enslaved by the culture? You continue to watch movies, most of you continue to watch TV, but will they play mind games? Will they exercise control on your mind, or will you be an autonomous, independent person who just decides to watch a movie or decides to watch a football game with all the emotional balance and emotional equanimity that you may not have had when you were a high schooler and you were essentially being lorded over by cultural pressures, by Madison Avenue? So we'll talk about this in Mitzvah another month and a half. And this is a good time to sit back and say, well, are there parts of Thanksgiving culture, those of you who are part of it, that maybe you've gotten too far, spiraled out of? I could say two words just to wake you up from your slumber. It's called Black Friday. That's a little ridiculous. A high holiday of consumerism. We're not interested in defining ourselves as consumers. And again, if you want to take advantage of sales, I'm all for that. If you want to take advantage of sales and buy your Rebbe a gift tomorrow, I'm even all more for that. But to get excited, to wait online, to wait online outside the Apple store just because you need the first iPhone, to get excited about it rather than just saying, oh, I need a new vacuum cleaner. I may as well wait till the sales come and the price goes down. That's perfectly balanced and sane. So yeshiva really is a retreat. And yeshiva really is a preservation. Yeshiva really is a severance. But there are two parts about the teva that bother me. That's why I can't see the teva as the controlling metaphor for yeshiva. Number one, first and foremost, and this is something that rankles me, and I'll talk about it in delicate terms. The whole premise of the teva is that those who are inside are saved, and those who aren't are basically doomed or condemned to die a slow and painful death. And it creates an exclusionary sense that I want to save myself. I don't really care about everyone outside. You see, I was raised in a Haredi culture. And I can make you a long, long list of advantages, traits, elements in my life that I'm eternally grateful and that I wish you had a part of. It's abjectly missing from your culture, the culture you were raised in. But at a certain point, I made a decision not to be one or the other, because you should never make that decision. You have to make a decision where to live. God forbid you should make a decision to be Haredi. God forbid you should make a decision to be Dati Lumi. God forbid you should make a decision to be modern Orthodox. Those are the decisions of developmental paupers, who instead of going out and trying to build and assemble who they are and gain from as many people as you can, say, you know what, it's just easy for me to stamp myself. Let me stamp myself. I know who I am. And like, the upper level of that is mediocrity. Most people reach even less than mediocrity by taking that route. But one of the aspects which was revolutionary to me when I came here to yeshiva is that part of my own avodas Hashem is to worry about people who are outside of the yeshiva. And that the word balabas is not a slur, but is a definition for who most people are striving to become: good, healthy balabatim. Now, I don't think it was ever hotwired into Haredi DNA, but it has become in many circles, not that I'm an expert in that world, in many circles you're either in or you're out. And even if you're out, then you're important, only because you may one day be in. You're a Kiruv project, rather than trying to build a band and a spectrum. And I've said so many times how Sephardic culture doesn't suffer that caste system or that hierarchy. And it's a product of something really powerful. It's that the yeshiva world created a very, very powerful world of self-sufficient internal Torah study. And that world had a meteoric rise and inspired the level of Talmud Torah that we are all the beneficiary of in the Ashkenazi community. But that world of Torah was under assault for about 150, 170 years by secularism and Reform Jewry and conservative Jewry and secularism and enlightenment. And so basically the outside world was seen as dangerous. So the walls were raised really high. I always like to think about the difference between Gush and Slobodka. Sometimes when I'm starting to interview, people ask me, which yeshiva would you compare yeshiva most to? So I know what they're expecting me to say, you know, which of the Hesder yeshivas? And I say, Lakewood. And they say, what does that mean? I say, well, we're the only two yeshivas in the modern world that predated the city and around which cities were developed. Most often you put a yeshiva in a city. What about a different model where yeshiva is built on an empty parch of land or empty mountain, and all of a sudden a Torah community thrives around the yeshiva? I don't know what the numbers are today, but upwards of 50% of Alon Shva people have smicha. Do any of you come from a community like that? Dati Lumi, again, I don't know the numbers, and I'm not saying that people don't have smicha or rejects. But that's because this yeshiva created a live town, and Alon Shvat in particular, and Gush in general, is an outcome of Torah. Well, they say, well, we're like Chevron. Why are you like Chevron? We're like Volozhin. I try to go through all the different aspects that we share with Chevron and Volozhin, because I know what they're expecting, and that's not how I think. I don't think of ourselves as alongside. I think of ourselves as historic yeshiva that's trying to continue the tradition of other historic yeshivas with important changes, because we live in Medinas Yisrael, but We haven't really detached ourselves or severed ourselves from our roots. And Eretz Hashem, in 2 weeks, we're going to have a Hanukkah symposium. So we're already planning it. Every year we have a 2-3 day Hanukkah symposium. I think this year it's going to be 2-3 days before because we're giving you an extended break. So about 10 years ago, our symposium was Gush and Volozhin. What are the differences? And the premise was, this is Volozhin. Now, there are some differences. Let's itemize them. But it's important that you see it that way because we see it that way. And as I tell you all the time, it's important that you look back to the world of yeshivas as part of your heritage and that you're their legacy. Rather than say, oh, we dress differently, we live in the modern thing, we serve in the army, who are our rabbanim? Our rabbanim are Rav Lichtenstein, Rav Kook, and the Rav. That's a pretty nice lineup. It's also all the great rabbanim of the yeshiva world that's part of your lineup. Because if you try to build a team of three, you're not going to succeed with yourself, nor will you succeed. If you build this large, broad spectrum of people, and these are people I get inspired with through Yer Shamayim and Tara, in certain areas, I'm able to disagree about world of women, about Dinas Yisrael, about secular education, one way or another. I'm not diving into these issues right now. But between you and me, those really are small, small issues. They're small change. They're all transient, and they're all going to disappear in 100 years. Whereas the real issues, they're all eternal, and they're all broad, panoramic issues that are going to define you, and that basically are going to be in your final exam in Shemayim. This is not what's on your final exam in Shemayim. Did your daughter study Torah in Migdal Oz, or did your daughter go to a seminary and get married at 19? Not going to be on the final exam. Hashem's not going to care about that. Hashem's not going to really care about whether you served in the army. He will care about how much you're committed to Am Yisrael. If you say, I served in the army, that's going to count. And if the other person says, you know what, I didn't serve in the army, but I spent every waking hour learning Torah and saying Tehillim on behalf of Am Yisrael and trying to help my community build a... That's going to count also, and you're really expressing the same value through different modes of expression. Those are the things that are going to count. But that's one of the things that was hard for me. There's a word, I shared it with you, it's a Yiddish word. It's called oisvarf. Oisvarf means outcast. Now clearly we'd all agree there are people who are outcasts, but somehow I found when I was your age that where I was growing up, the group of outcasts was a little too large for me to accept. So I don't like that sense that you're in or you're out. You have to protect the walls of yeshiva, but you care deeply about people and you care about them where they are right now, not just because of the turnaround that you expect, although we expect a turnaround, but you care deeply about their state of affairs and their state of being, and it's not all or nothing, and even if they're not putting on tefillin yet or keeping Shabbos, there's still religious and spiritual meaning to their lives, which we're responsible to help foster. So that's one part of this metaphor which I find abrasive. The second part of the metaphor, which brings us closer to tonight's shiur, is the second flaw of the ark metaphor is once Noach leaves the ark, the teva, has absolutely no bearing and no influence on his post-teva life. Obviously, what's his first thing? He gets drunk and he rolls around naked in the streets of Ararat. He's got some firewood. It's not like in a moment of stress or religious insecurity he says, well, what did the teva teach me? How can I use the teva? Nothing. Teva's a box. It's insulated well. It's waterproof. 3 stories, it's just a box. And after he's finished with the box, he discards it in the trash heap, like he'd discard any box. So that's not what yeshiva's meant to be, a box. You can save yourself for a couple of years while other people around you are drowning. What's the carryover? How can yeshiva carry over? What does yeshiva mean to carry over? So here's my metaphor. This is what I feel yeshiva should be likened to. It's not a box, and not an ark, and not a teva. It is a lighthouse. So now let's think about what a lighthouse functions for. Imagine the scene. A couple sailors about to set out to sea. They gather for about a week in the lighthouse. And they chart their nautical path, their nautical journey. At this point in the journey, we'll turn 3 knots to the left. And at this point in the journey, 2 clicks to the west. And at this point in the journey, we'll adjust the sails as follows. And then when we hit this part, and careful astronomy, and careful nautical navigation, they're sitting with charts, and they're they set their map. Let's set out to sea. Fast forward 3 weeks later, it's a blinding gale storm. It's pitch dark. It's a new moon. It's freezing. You can hardly stand on deck. Sheets of rain are flashing across the deck. The ship is being tossed to and fro, crashing through waves. You've got a little breach in the stern. You've got a mutiny underneath, under the deck. And you haven't eaten well in 3 weeks, and you're about to suffer from scurvy. And you have absolutely no clue whether turning three clicks to the left or three clicks to the right is going to save you and save hundreds of people on ship. But you do it. You know why you do it? Here's the key line for tonight. Because you trust your former self more than you trust your current self. Because your former self in the lighthouse made certain decisions that your current self isn't equipped to make because you're too confused and it's too chaotic. And too much darkness and too much rain and too much waves and too much scurvy and too many rats. But you sat there in the lighthouse in a moment of better clarity and you saw the journey in a moment of tranquility and you charted a course and you dare not veer from that course or else you'll be engulfed at sea. That's called by me the lighthouse effect. And it's absolutely crucial in life in general to trust your former self more than and most people. If you don't think about it, that's not the way you operate. You trust, you make the decision based on who you are right now. I have a decision, I have a dilemma, which is what I think. That's how you process life. But are you in touch with your past? And are you in touch with your former self? And you're saying, I made a decision. Right now, doesn't seem like the right decision, but you know what? I can't trust myself right now to make decisions because I'm under too much pressure and it's too hard and I'm stressed, I'm confused, I'm weak. But I made decisions in the past and I'm going to trust those decisions and implement them. That's called the lighthouse effect. And that's what yeshiva's for, and I'll get to this in a few moments, and that is exactly what's happening in Vayetze. Yaakov doesn't sing to Hashem. He doesn't offer a carbon. He doesn't say Shira. He doesn't say, let me put my head down for another dream. He says, you know what? I'm making a decision right now. My decision is, I'm coming back. Because I owe Hashem something. I owe him 10%. I'm locking it in as a contract. And you know what? If you're paying attention to Vayetze, it's only because of the self-obligation that he does come back. Because it's really easy to be a Shana Aleph guy and to lock in and say, this is what I'm going to do when you're just single and life's pressures haven't caught up with you yet. When you're Yaakov, Yaakov's a Shana Aleph guy in the beginning of the Parsha. Actually, Shana Tesvav, we'll talk about this a little bit later. He spent 14 years in yeshiva, but for the first part of tonight, he's a Shana Aleph guy. For the second part of tonight, we'll talk about Shana Tesvav. But by the time the parsha unfolds, he's got wives and kids and cattle and flock and pressure and internet and profession and responsibility. And by the time we meet him in the middle of Vayetze, he's dreaming not about angels, but he's dreaming about sheep. Vayehi ba'eis yachei matzon. Look at the second part. Vayehi ba'eis yachei matzon. Vayera b'chalom. What's he dreaming about now? His daily bread, his daily activity, his daily experience. Now all he's thinking about are sheep. He's not a Shana Aleph guy. Because he's a businessman. He's thinking about his business. And that's what pervades his dreams. And what's going to shake him out of it? What's going to get him back? Right now he's not in the position to make that decision. So what happens? The Malach comes and says, and he's not trying to inspire Yaakov because Yaakov at this point maybe can't process the inspiration because he's swirling. There's too much on his head. Anochi, look at the pasuk. Anochi ha'el Bezel. Get back to Bezel. Remember you made a commitment. Hashem ha'shach t'sham matzeva. You put up a matzeva. Hashem ha'dart t'li sham neder. You made a commitment. Right now, There are 1,000 different ways to justify not standing by that commitment. You got wives, you got a father-in-law, you got sheep, stone, dots, lines, carving, water, sticks, you got everything. And you give 1,000 different excuses why you shouldn't go back. But you locked yourself in, you made a commitment, stick by it. Asher mashach v'shem matzeva, asher nadarta lisham nadar, ata kum tse min ha'aretz hazos v'shuv al ha'aretz b'latecha. Who knows if Yaakov hadn't made that nadar, if the Malach would have been able to yank him out of Aram Naharaim. Who knows if another ladder or another vision would have been as effective. No visions, no ladders. Yaakov, you're confused now. You're at sea. You got too much on your mind. Trust your former self. Remember when you were Basel? Clear, lucidity, crystal clear morality. Everything was pretty clear to you. You made a decision. Go back to that decision. Go back to the lighthouse. Trust the decisions of the lighthouse. Please listen carefully to what I'm about to say. I promise you, your life will be dramatically different if you have lighthouse ability, lighthouse capacity. And I can't tell you when to use it, when not to use it, because the lighthouse can become a prison where you make decisions at age 18 and you never budge. Life has a way of turning on you. Life changes. Realities change. There's something called vicissitudes and shifts in life. And you can't just be wooden-headed and knock your head against the wall. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to do. I'm stubborn. I'm obstinate. I never change myself. You have to make changes. You have to adapt on the fly. You have to be responsible. We'll talk about this in Mitzvah Shem, Parshas Vayeshev, the difference between Yosef and Yehuda. You can't just be proactive and map your whole life out. And life's going to have a lot of curveballs for you. Right now, a lot of boys, when they're your age, part of coming of age and part of finding your own identity is you look back at your parents and judge who they were as parents. And to a degree, that's healthy because it's part of forming yourself. Until you were a child and you were under your parents' auspices. And now you're trying to say, well, who am I? And part of who am I is saying, okay, well, what type of parent do I want to be? And it's hard to make that respectful. Sometimes it's hard because you suffered in your mind parental decisions that you at this point disagree with. But you got to give people a pass because life is tough. And you don't know who you're going to be in 40 years because raising a family and dealing with this world. So doesn't mean you have to agree with their decisions. As I said before, it's healthy and important for you to think about, but the harshness has to be a little bit moderated because life isn't so easy. People go through a lot, and they don't know who they'll become. And you don't know who you'll become. But you have to have moments and issues that you lighthouse. And I'm turning it into a verb. You got to lighthouse things. Let me give you two examples from my life when I lighthoused it. And not that you have to follow these examples, but I want that term to become a verb for you. So at some point in your life, somewhere down the road, you're standing at an intersection, you don't have the guts to make a decision that you know is right. I just got to lighthouse it. I made that decision. I'm sticking to my guns. I'm not pulling back. My legs are wobbling. My knees are shaking, but I'm lighthousing it. 1985. I'm in this room, finished my second year in yeshiva. Wow. 2 years. Magical. Another world. Never could have imagined. 2 best years of my life. I made a decision to myself, I'm coming back after college. Like, not enough here for me. I need to come back after college. Come back after college. You know how many people made that decision with me? Like 50. Come back after college. I know it's a little premature, and hopefully at some point the boys who will consider second year staying will share their conversations with us. We're not going to be aggressive in the decision-making process. But one thing, take off the table. Do not be lame and say, oh, I'm going to come back after college. If I had a dollar bill for every boy that stayed 1 year and sincerely said they're coming back after college and didn't, sincerely, I'm talking about people who are deceiving me. I could retire, build a second yeshiva, build the Amital Center, and treat you all to Burgers Bar for the rest of the year. Every year. Don't get any ideas much. So I'm still making a rabbi's salary. treat me, it's a whole different story. As we said before, turn the tables on you, turn the tables on myself. And I mean it sincerely. Because most boys go back with that plan and life catches up with you. Social, professional, financial, it's just normal. Parents, millions of things get in the way. Your life's going to be more complicated, not less complicated. I'm not telling you what to decide, but I'm absolutely demanding that you decide with a clear head. Because I have too much respect for you. And I'll never, ever let you, never, ever take a decision away from you. But I will always demand that you make wise, open-eyed decisions rather than false narratives, because that will come back to bite you. It's the false narratives in life. When you thought one thing, you made a decision, and then all of a sudden, eureka, oh my goodness, what was I thinking? My terms were off. You can never guarantee the right decision, but you should always try to guarantee to make decisions the right way. Nothing, no shame in that. You wake up one day, you made a mistake, no shame in that. People make mistakes. Part of being a human being. You shouldn't be embarrassed to look yourself in the mirror. What am I most embarrassed about? I didn't get all the facts right. I told myself, I cut corners. I told myself a story. What was I thinking? That was stupid. That was humiliating. I told myself a story to make a decision. Don't tell yourself stories. Make bold decisions, right or wrong. You can live with bad decisions. What you can't live with is poorly achieved decisions. Those hurt. So here I am, 1985, I'm coming back. I'm coming back to yeshiva. Now it's 1987. Of course, I went through college in the express lane. Put it that way, 2 years. 1987, I'm coming back, right? Are you coming back? Well, you know, talk to my friend. She's got a job in accounting. I'm dating this girl. Are you coming back? Well, you know, are you coming back? So there I was, the only guy on the plane coming back. One or two other guys. That's not what I bought into. All my friends are staying in America, dating, earning, moving, and I'm going back to some small little hut. This is a small place then. There was nothing in me that said, go back to Israel. Like, if you ask me, decide now, you want to go back? No! What, are you crazy? I'm not going to know anyone. I don't, I've had a terrible year. I'll be terrified. They're going to remind, never get married. You kidding me? I got on the plane with a, not a butterfly, like a whole colony of butterflies in my stomach. They're taking over my stomach. Oh, whapping around in there. I lighthoused it. I said, I trust 1985 me better than I trust 1987 me. Because 1987 me was already war-worn, war-weary with college and term papers. And I said, you know, 1985 me was in a state of tranquility. I saw things clearly, and I'm going to rely on that guy more than I'm relying on this guy. Second best decision ever made. Second best time I lighthoused it. If you think 87 was me lighthousing it, 93, wow. Now the stakes are even higher. I got two kids, got a future ahead of me, best jobs a rabbi could ever want, parents, Baruch Hashem, like walk in the park. Now I said, well, now's the time to make Aliyah. If we don't make Aliyah now, it just isn't going to happen. We're right at that crossroads. If we don't come now, it's going to be 30 years. My wife and I realized we're right at that crossroads. And boy, not a colony, but I became a butterfly. Like there's nothing. You know those big, what do they call those? Those big colorful butterflies and monarch butterflies, right? That's a whole monarch butterflies in my stomach. That's just regular, moths. This is like monarch butterflies. Whole colony of them streaming north right in my belly. And my wife wasn't so excited about coming then. It was hard for her. Obviously, we had two kids, grandparents. I said, it made sense. It made sense before. I can't trust myself now. I got dollar signs in my eyes, career paths in my eyes. I can't trust myself. I got to just storm the plane. Get on the plane. I stormed the plane with a lot of uncertainty. It was the best decision of my life. What I'm proudest of. So I can't tell you when to lighthouse it, but I can just tell you that you should, and I can give you how to do it. And that's capture those moments where you have real spiritual, religious clarity. You feel that one. You know what that feeling is. Hopefully at some point as you're growing closer to Hashem and more religious and just like there's a more feeling of wholesomeness. I know, yes, this is a good way to lead my life. Hopefully some of that coming around where It's not about friends cursing and dirty pictures and wasting. This is a good way. I feel good. This is wholesome. It's a good way to lead my life. This is something I want to become. And then tell yourself, okay, now, what decision can I make now that I can come back to later and lighthouse it? Now, they can be bold decisions, like coming back to yeshiva, like moving to Israel, and that will dramatically change your life. But it doesn't have to be. There are big lighthouses and small lighthouses. They could be smaller decisions, such as, that's it. My new name is Minion Man. That's it. New me is, I'm not missing Minion. No matter what it takes, I'm going to be Minion Man. And I'm going to go to the ends of the earth. That's going to be me for the rest of my life. And even 2 years from now, it's freezing cold outside. There's a game on TV. My friends aren't. That's it. And I don't trust the new me. The new me is going to be under siege. I'm going to be that guy. I'm going to be the guy that doesn't talk in Minion. Or I'm going to be Steinmaker Vechatarga Man. Or I'm going to... It could be a small decision. But by definition, a lighthouse is you don't budge. Even if you tell yourself you should budge, and even if it doesn't make sense when you're thinking about budging, you just stick, you stick to things. And again, I also can't tell you what decisions they should be, or else I can't tell you the boundary between lighthousing it and being flexible. I'm just trying to introduce a new way of thinking into your experience. People don't often think that way. They lose touch with their past and they move on. It's all evolutionary. Who am I now? Let me face decisions. Rather than saying, I made a decision about this already, and I'm not going to let life erode my conviction and steal my decision. I'm giving you a new decision-making tool. And hopefully you'll use that tool. And that's exactly what Yaakov's doing. And by the end, when he comes back, then his vision catches up with him. Because in the end of Parshas Vayetze, he's dreaming about Malachim again. He's seeing Malachim again. It's a nice, tightly knit Parsha. In the beginning, he's thinking about Malachim, but he doesn't just say, okay, I got a vision of Malachim, I'm set, I'm inspired. I'm sure everyone leaves this yeshiva inspired. And they're only their yeshivas inspired, but then you lose traction, you lose your intensity, things catch up with you. Yaakov loses it. He starts dreaming about sheep. But he knows he has a commitment and just goes back. And ironically enough, if you look at part of Vayishach, it even takes some time to get back. Even if Vayishach doesn't make it back all the way, but it's just tugging him back. You have a commitment, stick by your commitment, stand by your word to yourself. That's where people lose it. People lose it because they make commitments and they don't have the ability, and I understand why, because life changes and your internal conviction changes, your internal thought process changes. And if you allow all decisions to be purely a product of the here and now, you're always going to be tossed by the waves of time and the waves of... There's got to be a strong enough spine to say, I'm doing this because it made sense. And I'm powering through because... And it takes an imaginative capacity to live in your past, not just live in your future. That's why it's so important to be in touch with your past, not just live life. I'm trying to expand your minds and expand your imagination so that life isn't just, what do I need right now? History, verticality, continuum, what happened before me, what's happening after me, what's my life about, what's the potency? I'm trying to take your lives and make them larger. So you're thinking about larger issues, larger ideals, larger people, larger historical sweeps, rather than, you know, when's Burger Bar going to be delivered? Who's going to win the game tonight? Which are, don't get me wrong, still enjoy those, but all of a sudden gets you thinking about a plane of life and a plane of experiences a little bit larger than yourselves. Okay. So this is going to be an inverted message, the second part of tonight's shiur. It'll be the same message, but inverted for Corona. Okay? So, listen to the Corona message, but also listen to the inversion of the message. Okay. Famously, Yaakov spends 14 years in yeshiva. Now he's a Shana Tesbav guy when he leaves. Sometimes guys come over to me, should I stay Shana Beshe? That's the Shana Beshe. Stay Shana Beshe. That's the Shana Beshe. I said, okay, I'll try to help you. I'll try to help you. Here's my Shana Bet Kool-Aid. I'll try to help you. But before I try to help you, let's first take a few steps back and cry. Why am I crying, Rebbe? Because your grandfather, your great-great-grandfather, is looking down at Shemayim and crying and laughing at the same time. Because he spent 12 years in yeshiva before I even thought about going and selling shmatas in the local marketplace in Poland, because you couldn't be a doctor, you couldn't be a lawyer. You go to yeshiva, that's what you do. You go to yeshiva, you spend 10, 12 years learning HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah, then you go out and earn a living. Like, he's looking down, she's saying, what's he talking about? Shut up, Pat. Like, I never had that question. I spent 14 years in yeshiva. Okay, it's a different world, and that's what our culture allows us, and I'm no way trivializing the decisions, but, you know, a little reality check. If we go back to 1620, this sounds like a comical conversation. Okay, well, Rabbi, there's certain advantages to 20. Of course there are, but every time we evolve, we also take steps backwards, and that's the world we live in. We can't turn the clock back, but just a little perspective. So Yaakov spends 14 years in yeshiva. Okay. Now, how do we know he's in yeshiva 14 years? Oh, there's a Rashi in the end of Chayisara. You do the math, Yishmael, Yaakov, seen the Rashi. Some people like skipping the Rashis with math. Math, I don't want to do math. So, okay, if you want, if that's the price you have to pay to do Shtayim Mikra Vecha Targum, I hereby absolve you of mathematical Rashis and of grammatical Rashis. Those are the two ones you can skip. Try to read all the grammar, this letter, that letter, the math. Okay, if that's the price to get you to Shtayim Mikra Vecha Targum Utopia, I'm all in. Okay, great. Very important mitzvah. Very important halacha. Okay. So the kasha is, why doesn't the Torah tell us? Let's see. Eved Avram by the well. 57 psukim. Yaakov and Yeshiva Shein Vaver. 0. What's more important for history? The well meeting or Yaakov learning Hashem's will? I mean, not in any way devaluing the well meeting, but Yaakov spending 14 years understanding Hashem and spreading it to the world, that's pivotal. That's revolutionary. Nothing. 0. Why don't we see Yaakov in the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever? So to help you understand why we don't see Yaakov in the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever, source number one, listen to how Chazal described Yaakov in the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever. Dalet number one. Vayishkav makom ahu, kol yud dalet shana shahayatamun beveis ever lo shachav. Yaakov didn't sleep for 14 years when he was in the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever. That's why he was so tired that night. Took a little shluff. 14 years without sleep. Okay, that's obviously hyperbolic. But he got by limited sleep for 14 years. But how does the Torah describe Yaakov? Moshe, it's not going to stay close. We'll just live with it. How does the Torah describe Yaakov in the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever? What's the verb? Tamun. What does the word tamun mean? Hidden. Anyone learn Bava Kama? You're chayiv if your fire consumes someone else's property, unless the items that were consumed were tamun, were hidden, concealed. Yaakov didn't just spend 14 years in yeshiva Shem Ve'ever. He never left. He was tamun. He was buried there. No one saw him. He didn't go out for Shabbos. He didn't go to the mall. He didn't get together with friends. He spent 14 years locked up in the yeshiva. And literally, to capture that, because he was invisible for 14 years, we don't see him. Because no one saw him for 14 years. He wasn't walking around, prancing around, getting together. No one saw him for 14 years. He was tamun. So to capture the fact that he was hidden, the Torah hides him for 14 years. It's a perfect form and function, substance and style. The beautiful meeting of the two. Torah doesn't describe 14 years because for 14 years no one saw him. Okay, so now for 2-3 minutes, let's make believe it's 2019 or 2021 when you're all back for Shabbat and you'll come to my sicha. For the 2021 version, you guys can listen to it or come back, hopefully. Get on that plane, storm the plane. That one comes in ninth place. I mean, storm the plane, like, just get on the plane. The rabbi told me to storm the plane. I mean, you know, get on the plane. With the monarch butterflies in your stomach. So 2019, my message to boys is, see, that's what yeshiva's about. Yeshiva is about shaving off as much as you can from your life and trying to focus and dedicate as many resources, emotional, physical, as you can for that one elusive goal of forming a keshar with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And yeshiva life is not supposed to be normal. You're not supposed to sleep. You're not supposed to have balance. Now, you have to have balance, obviously. You have to sleep, obviously. You have to eat, obviously. You have to continue being a healthy person, obviously. But at some point, if everything is healthy, 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 and everything, then the intensity, the passion, the depth, the immersion, the personalization, it's going to suffer. Sometimes in life, you have to put yourself into, you have to be in that zone where you're living and living one thing and one thing only. Now, this year, you've had it thrust upon you. Rabbi, what are you talking about? Have you been paying attention? We haven't left this place. And even the Israelis are leaving the Shabbos. We're not going anywhere. Okay, so the message to you in 2020 is count your blessings. Don't complain about it. It's hard. I know it's hard. And I'm in no way diminishing how difficult it is. And we spend hours trying to make life as easy for you as we can. Literally, hours of Bittul Torah for your sake, because that's our job. Every little decision that normally took 3 minutes on a WhatsApp now is a full-blown summit between me, Ellie, and Rabbi Friedman on the back porch. Should we let them go? Should we not let them go? And we're trying to save your Hanukkah by keeping you in for Shabbos. Because sending you out for Shabbos would mean testing. And if one person tests positive, goodbye Hanukkah, goodbye five-day Hanukkah vacation. So we're trying really, really hard to get you to get your Hanukkah vacation. Really, really hard. And please help us. I mean, not that you're... But please try to be as responsible as you can so everyone can go away for Hanukkah. But sometimes in life, frustrating situations carry little gift bags on the side. And I told you so often, one of the gift bags of Corona is it's really deep and existential. No one's here just for a walk in the park. And you realize life and death. And you realize that life is serious and delicate. And you're thinking in ways, I promise you, that most years we have to struggle to get people to think. Most years it takes us a lot of time just to get guys to the existential level that you're at. To realize we mean this. This is business. It's going to shape your life. The amount of devotion we're showing just to come in and teach and just... Because this matters to us, and if it matters to us, it should matter to you, and take it seriously in that. Second gift is, I know it's hard, but I promise you, there's a gift here. There's a gift of not leaving yeshiva. There's a gift of being 1/14th of Yaakov. Not even, but 1/28th of Yaakov. There's a gift here. And sometimes gifts become gifts when you are conscious of them, and you process them, and you lean into them rather than fighting them. And that's my 2020 message to you. Here's your chance. Now, for sure, we're going to kick you out for Hanukkah. I want to stay, but Harry said we should be like Yaakov. No, because trust us to know when it's too much like Yaakov and when you go out of your mind and when we're trying so hard to find that balance. But as hard as it is and in those difficult moments, there's something really great here. And it's a metaphor, not a metaphor, but a template for life. You're going to go through difficult experiences. And I promise you, I hope I'm wrong, but many, many of your experiences will make this experience look like a cakewalk. Some of the things you're going to go through. And you're going to have to use different tools to survive experiences, to navigate experiences, and to grow through experiences. One tool is recognizing, well, what am I going to gain from this? How is this going to make me into a better person? How is this really a gift wrap? And no way to rewrite history or sanitize events or to create artificial sugarcoating. I just saw some headline or something, a really quick headline flashed across my screen that some columnist in China wrote a long list of advantages and benefits to Corona. There's something, you can look it up and whatever, and they took it down. And I understand why. When people are dying and suffering, you don't write it that way, or you write an article that says, it's terrible. Okay, but you should know, in addition to, it's maybe the article was written lopsided. I don't know. I didn't read the article. I just saw this quick headline, take down. I didn't see the whole headline. But there are opportunities here. And they're being thrust upon you. Not necessarily opportunities you can choose about. No one's going to let you leave. And if you leave, won't let you come back. Until you quarantine for 14 days. So, or 10 days, whatever. No one's going to... But think about Yaakov and Parshas Vayetze. Think about me. 35, yeah, I didn't run around. I was here pretty much every week. Because when I get stuck somewhere, I think about my grandfather. My grandfather, who learned in Slobodka, told me the stories of being dropped off by the wagon and the horses at age 12, knowing he wouldn't see his parents for 2 years. That's why he became a Talmid Chacham and Amanam Maretz. Because in his terms, he spent 2 years just sitting and learning without needing to be anywhere else. And in my terms, I spent week upon week upon week upon week stringing weeks together and Shabbosos together, and it became something larger than the sum of its parts. It was synergetic. The flow, the energy, the momentum, the weaving in. So if you're looking for an opportunity now, and hopefully you'll have to strike it on your own, because we'll break out soon from these. But again, don't get yourself wrong. This vaccination isn't going to be, it's not like someone's going to stand up, blow a whistle, and say, okay, Corona's over, everyone out of the pool. It's not like happening that way. It's going to be slow, it's going to be staged, masks are here for a while. So while we still have it, savor it. Take advantage of the parts that are worth taking advantage of. Let's go to Mara Bellstein.